Then when December 7th, 1941 takes place, you're about 16 years old. Do you remember that day and how you heard about it?
I was sitting in a soda bar with some friends having ice cream in the middle of the afternoon. None of us really understood the impact of it, but we remember that moment very well.
Had you heard of Honolulu, Hawaii? Some people said they'd never heard of it and didn't know where it was.
I'm not sure that I did either.
Right.
It was a long way from Tulsa.
And then rationing took place. How was your family affected by rationing?
I think gas rationing is the only thing that I recall that changed for us. We did a lot of walking.
Explain then the gas rationing, what that was.
Well, it meant that Bob couldn't drive a car and have fun with the girls. That was the impact.
Remember hearing news from the war, the bombing of Hiroshima or anything like
that? Yeah, I was overseas at that time.
Okay.
I didn't think through the morality of the situation. I was just glad that the war was over.
Right. So then after you graduated from high school, then you went into the service?
Yeah.
Tell us where you went and what you did.
Well, it's a rather funny story. I wanted to be a naval aviator, so I signed up for naval aviation. By the time I graduated, they said there was no openings in naval aviation, so they sent me to college for 2 years in Pittsburgh, Kansas. I picked up some credits there that I used later. Then they sent me to pre-flight school. And at that point, they said, well, we have 36,000 cadets seeking 6,000 openings, and what are you going to do? And they gave us some options. So I elected to then stay in the Naval Reserve, but work with the Merchant Marine, which is also an officer training program. I started off wanting to be a flyer, and I ended up in the engine room in a very interesting shift. People avoided ammunition ships. They were always afraid of the opportunity for explosion. So it was kind of an isolated life.
Where did that ship go to?
Our first port was in Ulithi, which is a large staging area in the Pacific. We later got as far as the Philippines. That's where I was when the war ended.
Never took any fire?
None. I heard some depth charges from time to time, but I didn't think I had enemy exposure.
So then how many years did you serve?
About 2.5 years.
So you come out of the military in 19...
Actually, I got out in December of 1945, and I enrolled in Notre Dame in March of 46.
What drove you to the University of Notre Dame?
My dad thought they had a good football team. He also admired Newt Rockne.
Yes.
And I was a Catholic, and my mother thought that was a great idea. So I never reconsidered another school at that time.
Did they have a strong architectural department?
By the time I left, I thought they did. They had a couple of professors from Hungary that really impacted the program, and I thought were very good because they were doing a lot of experimental work in terms of climate and how climate affects building design. I thought that was a pretty important thing to deal with at that time.
So you never wavered on your mission to be an architect from the time you felt it at 10 or 11, 12, through your military training or anything. You knew what you were going to do.
I never wavered.
Were those good years there? Did you work for any Chicago firms as an intern?
Yeah, those were really nice years at Notre Dame. Notre Dame was only 90 miles from Chicago. And I worked with Halliburton Root one summer, which is a very large firm. The other summer I worked with Perkins & Will, which is one of the three best firms in Chicago. After I graduated, I went to Perkins & Will. I was there for 2 years, and I became a licensed architect in Illinois. And then I quit Perkins & Will and went to Illinois Institute of Technology for 2 years to study under Mies van der Rohe, who was one of the four great architects of the 20th century.
Was he the man who was less is more?
That's right. That's right. I don't want to be interesting. I want to be good.
So when you went to the Illinois Institute of Technology, what year would that have been?
I graduated in 53.
All good experience for you there. But then you also studied in Germany.
Yeah, after I was finishing work at IIT, I applied for a Fulbright grant. I applied for England because I spoke the language.
Yeah.
Then we had a child and I had to lay off and tell him no, and I went back next year. The Office of International Education had a place in downtown Chicago. I went and I said, my second year I applied for England, I didn't get it. What happened? They said, well, it's just the luck of the draw. Then they said, you know, we want to send 80 postgraduate students to Germany, we were having trouble filling our quota. And I said, I don't speak German. He said, that's no problem. You'll pick it up. So with that sort of slender thread, we spent a year in Germany. That was really very valuable for me.
Who did you study under in that Fulbright scholarship?
I was lucky. Germany's foremost architect after the war was named Egon Eiermann, E-I-E-R-M-A-N. He was a very good architect. In Germany, they expected their teachers in architecture, their professors, to maintain an architectural practice along with their teaching, which is very different from this country. Professor Eiermann said, I'll give you an independent project. And I thought about that, and I said, no. When I realized that I didn't know really any German, I went to Eiermann's secretary and I said, tell Professor Eiermann I want to sharpen his pencils. She said, do you want to work in this office? I said, yeah. She said, we can't pay you. That's against the regulations. I said, well, I'll work in the afternoons free. So they said, okay. Eiermann then had a lease on three different apartments because he had a marriage breakup. He said, well, you can have one of my apartments free if you'll pay for the utilities. That was a remarkable encouragement for me. Eiermann to the German embassy in Washington, D.C., the German pavilion at the Brussels World Fair, a lot of high-rise, a lot of industrial work. He did the Kaiser Wilhelm Kirche project in Berlin after the war. He was such an important guy, and he admired Mies van der Rohe so much that I was able to kind of put those two guys together. And I think it really did have an influence on my career.
Of these people that we're talking about now, who had the most influence?
Mies van der Rohe.
And what was that influence?
Mies was very committed that architecture express the nature of our time. He saw science and technology as a real epoch in human history. And he thought buildings should acknowledge this. I think that sort of logic made a great deal of sense to me. Architects was in shambles in the 19th century because architects were simply taking Greek temples, Gothic churches, Renaissance palaces, and plastering them on the sides of buildings. I call this slipcover architecture. Mies was the antithesis of that. So I think people of my generation sort of thought we were a part of a revolution. We thought we were on a mission. And I think that gave us motivating force in our work.
One thing stands out as you talked about Eiermann, and I want young people to remember, you went back to him and said, I don't care, I'll just sharpen your pencils. And you were willing to work for nothing.
Yes.
You wanted to be that close to that man.
Yes.
Didn't have to be paid, didn't have to give me a job, just let me sharpen your pencils.
And he did little things, like we were at a party one night. Germans like parties a lot. At 11 o'clock in the evening, he pulled some paper out of his pocket and started making notes. That made me think that guy was really thinking all the time. Mm-hmm. People like that were important mentors. To me, I was very lucky to run across guys of that caliber.